Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason. Watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mays Denver, at Eric Goodman. Right now, we are giving away $20 to go to Smoke and Dave's Barbecue and Brew. Love their smoked ribs. Their smoked corned beef Reuben is great. Smoked wings are fantastic. Sides, fantastic. Macaroni and cheese is great. So are the barbecue beans with pork and brisket. They have great non-barbecue options as well. You can find Smoke and Dave's Barbecue and Brew in Centennial off of Arapaho Road. You can also find them in North Denver. And I'm going to give you another thing you should get off that menu.
Yes.
They have a brownie, which is great. But then they have some sort of like raspberry something compote that you put on top of it. Mm-hmm. And it was so good. I didn't use all that compote on top of the brownie and I saved it for other things.
Like maybe a peanut butter and raspberry compote sandwich, perhaps?
You could put it on anything. I'd put it on Cheerios. I'd put it on a steak.
Interesting. On a steak.
It's like their sauces are five-star restaurant quality.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just the barbecue.
Yes.
It's Smoke and Dave's Barbecue and Brew. Again, first caller, 303-831-1340. You're going to Smoke and Dave's Barbecue on us. Time now for The Lead.
The Lead is presented by Marco's Pizza in Aurora, where everything is fresh, never frozen, like the dough and sauces to go with hand-cut meats and veggies. Order today at either location, off Smoky Hill Road or Quincy in Aurora.
I'm going to make a prediction right now. I'm going to plant my flag. I'm not willing to say I'll get a Broncos tattoo if I'm wrong. So I'm confident, but not that confident, because you never know what's going to happen with the draft, and some team might make some crazy move. And it depends on who trades up and things like that. If there are no trades done, for the sake of argument, I believe the Broncos will trade back in this draft. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to make a very safe assumption, Mace, that three quarterbacks get taken in the top 10 picks. Is that fair to say?
I'd say it might be more than that.
Okay.
I'm looking at four once again.
Okay. But I'm going to assume it's going to be three. This is a numbers game to me.
Yep.
I will guarantee that Jamar Chase and Devontae Smith are going to go in the top 10.
No doubt.
That's five. Micah Parsons is going to be six.
Yes.
Penei Sewell is going to be seven. Mm-hmm. And I'd be willing to gamble one of the top pass rushers is going to be eight.
Just because the premium of the position. The other guy I'd be watching out for in that top cluster is Kyle Pitts, the tight end out of Florida, who could be the best tight end prospect to come along in many years.
But with that, that's eight guys. Those eight guys, I think, will go in the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
With that, the Broncos are picking at nine. The position they need the most is cornerback.
Right.
I think they would love to get Micah Parsons. They would love to get Penei Sewell. They might go after a quarterback, although I doubt it. So you'll have Patrick Surtain, who could be available at nine.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have Farley.
Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech.
I have been told they're very high on Surtain. They really like him a lot. Like a lot. Like if they could pick one of those cornerbacks out there, Surtain is their guy.
Which is interesting because you kind of look at the two of them on the surface, and Farley may have a higher ceiling and can be a little bit more versatile. You can use him in the slot. You can use him outside. You can even use him at safety. And Patrick Surtain doesn't have that same sort of versatility or overall athleticism.
Right. And then there's another really good cornerback out there. I can't remember his name. I'm sure you probably know it off the top of your head.
You got J.C. Horn out of South Carolina.
Talking
about him
J.C. Horn
being perhaps in the late teens to the 20s. And then you get beyond that, you're talking about round two caliber cornerbacks. Eric Stokes of Georgia comes to mind.
Well, it's not going to be Stokes. They're not going to go for a cornerback in the second round unless they trade down
and then start making some moves.
So with that, I think that, you know, George Payton is going to look at his board. He's going to do his mock drafts and say, okay, if we trade out at nine,
mm-hmm.
does the 10th team need a cornerback? Does the 11th team need a quarterback? And then you trade down accordingly and acquire picks. I think acquiring picks would be a smart move for this reason alone. they might need some capital to trade up in the draft next year if they need a quarterback.
And the reality is that when you look at the draft order, right after the Broncos are the Cowboys, they're not going to pick a quarterback.
A cornerback?
Well, no, they're not picking a quarterback, because the reason why QB comes into play here is because teams traditionally will give up more to move up to take a QB than for other positions.
Right.
In my mind, if I am George Payton and I'm thinking about a deal, I want a deal that brings back a first-round pick next year. And that's where you start looking at teams like the Colts.
Right.
They're picking 21st. Washington picks 19th.
Well, why wouldn't they just trade with Dallas?
Why wouldn't the Broncos trade with Dallas?
No, why wouldn't the Colts trade with Dallas? You're giving up less potentially.
Because you want to go as high as you can to make that deal. The Broncos should make give every indication that they're open for a deal. And because you're going to have, if you have three quarterbacks go off the board in the first eight picks, or four quarterbacks, then you get a lot of competition because you have dwindling resources when it comes to QBs in the draft. And so you start seeing those names pop off the list, and then you might be able to extract a deal from Washington or from the Colts, maybe even Pittsburgh.
No, you're missing a big team here.
A big team. Well, I'm talking about the teams that were playoff teams. You move up further, New England is sitting there at
15. New England is sitting there at 15 now.
But could you get a first-round pick to move up six spots? That's the question. Some of these teams like Washington and the Colts may be looking to level jump, and they'll give you a premium. Ideally, you come out of this, if you move down, ideally you come out of this with an extra first round pick in 22.
What do you remember off the top of your head what Buffalo? It's funny because John Murphy, the voice of the Bills, is going to be joining us next to preview the AFC Championship game. Do you remember what the Bills gave or what the Chiefs gave the Bills to move up?
There was the first round pick in 2018 for one thing.
And was that the same draft?
The Mahomes draft was 17. There was a future first round pick. KC gave up to move from 27 up to number 10.
Yeah.
KC gave up a third round pick in 17 and their first rounder in 2018.
Yeah, 27 to 10.
That was 17 spots. But let's take a look at let's say Pittsburgh, okay? The Broncos have dealt with the Steelers before, back in 2019.
I don't know if they're that desperate with Roethlisberger yet to make a move like that. The Patriots are desperate to make a move. The next guy off the board, listen, the first three
Washington
guys...
Washington might be desperate too.
Okay. Well, the first three quarterbacks to go off the board in no particular order, although we will start with Trevor Lawrence. I don't know if it's going to be Fields or Zach Wilson, but then the intriguing prospect is Trey Lance. He will go in the top 15. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Someone will fall in love with him. There are teams doing their homework on him. Carolina, for instance, is doing its homework on Trey Lance. Carolina's interesting because they're sitting there with that number eight pick. And they're the ones that could shuffle the deck a little bit and make it harder for the Broncos to pull off a deal. The other thing that comes into play here is What do the Broncos want out of this draft? Do they want the guy who can help them right now? Because Surtain or Farley could help them right now be a better team.
I don't think they
want.
Or
is George Payton playing the long game, the asset acquisition game?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because we talked about Woody Page's column in which he said, "I talked to an executive and he believes the Broncos will take a step back before they take three steps forward." Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what he's referring to, but I can tell you they love Surtain. And if you love Surtain that much, and you don't even know if you're going to bring back Boye, and you have a history of injuries with Callahan, and Ojemudia is not a great tackler, what do you really have in a division that has Mahomes, and Justin Herbert. How far back do you really want to go to mortgage next season?
The problem, though, is that the biggest question is QB. And that is and as important as corner is, QB still hovers overall. Do you want to basically go to the mat with Drew Lock and not have the assets to be in position to make that move up for a quarterback? Because I think the team may take a step back, but I don't think they're going to win fewer than 5 or 6 games.
I don't think so either. But
and that means that you're going to have to not only take both of your picks in 2022, but probably your first rounder in 2023 to move up. But still, it's a lot more palatable to do that than if you don't have that extra first round sure. pick and you're having to trade maybe 3 years of first rounders or throw in some second rounders. You have a lot more possibilities to get one of those top quarterbacks next year if you've got an extra first
rounder. Those top quarterbacks will go in the top three, though. So let's say
you're... Which is why you've got to have ammunition to make it. But some of those teams picking the top three may have already taken their quarterback in recent years. And if you have 5 teams take quarterbacks, say in the first 15 picks this year,
yeah.
those are teams that are almost certainly not taking quarterbacks next year.
Right.
So you may be able to capitalize
yeah.
off of a little bit of a valley in the market of teams looking for first-round QBs.
Well, there is a valley in the market. You know why? Because there are 8 teams in the AFC right now that already have their quarterbacks, and they're all under 25. They're fine. Broncos aren't necessarily fine. Coming up after the break, we're going to go out to Buffalo, bringing a longtime friend of mine, John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, to preview the AFC Championship game on Sunday.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Maze Denver, at Eric Goodman. Go to graniteliquidators.com. Got another place you need to go, Denver Distillery. If you're looking for something smooth and refreshing as your cocktail, you need to check out Denver Distillery. You can go to the distillery off of Broadway in Denver, or you can go to your liquor store, and you can find some award-winning spirits like sweet potato vodka, Colorado gin, straight four-grain bourbon, apple pie moonshine, and bourbon barrel aged spice rum. Award-winning spirits. Go get some. Go talk to your local liquor store, and if they don't have it, demand it. Denver Distillery, a Denver classic. Time now for the buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Bubbles Liquor World. Go to Bubbles Liquor World in Castle Rock for the lowest prices on beer, wine, and spirits.
All right, let's go out to the hotline. I want to bring in a longtime friend of mine, John Murphy, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills. Murph and I worked together at WKBW Television. That's where he got his start in Buffalo on television. He was there for all 4 of the Bills' trips to the Super Bowl, and now the Bills have a chance to go there again. Murph, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Eric?
Real good. I want to take you back to the Bills' first appearance in the Super Bowl. I was not there. You were. If you can dig back in your memory banks, I'm guessing the excitement in Western New York was palpable for the Bills going to their first Super Bowl. Can you compare that feeling in Buffalo to what it is now?
Yeah, I mean, it feels similar. It's a different world now, obviously, you know, but it does feel similar. Look, and as big as that was back in 1990, Super Bowl 25, I'd have to say that the NFL is bigger and more prevalent and is covered more than it was even back then. And so it feels very big, almost as big as then right now here in Buffalo. That was the first time the Bills ever went to the big game, and they went 4 consecutive years, as you noted. But people were pumped, but I feel like it's even bigger now because there's so much coverage of the team and so much talk about the team and social media and everything that's associated with that. You can't escape it. You can't escape. And you know what else? The league really merchandises it well, and the teams do as well, as far as clothing and and all kinds of stuff with the Bills logo on it. There's more than there was even in 1990, so it's pretty impressive.
Because of COVID, haven't had the glimpse of what would ordinarily be the atmosphere over there at the stadium down in Orchard Park. But it seemed like even though there were only a few thousand fans, that they were able to generate a decent amount of energy for both the playoff games. Being there in person, what sense did you get from how the crowd, even a limited one, really helped the Bills in those two games?
Yeah, they helped them a lot. You know, the state of New York and the Bills worked out a plan where they allowed 6,700 fans in for each of the two playoff games, and they had to get a whole different crowd in for each of them, and they had to be tested and screened as they came in. 6,700 fans is less than 10% of the capacity of the stadium, so you don't think it's much, but I'm telling you, there was a sequence in the second quarter last Saturday night when the Baltimore Ravens were threatening to score, and they took back-to-back false start penalties because they couldn't hear. They had to go to a silent count. That's how loud the 6,700 fans were, and maybe just the fans down in that part of the stadium. It was amazing. I took off my headphones. We're calling the play-by-play up on the radio booth, and there, you know, the Ravens are at the other end of the field, but I did take off my headphones. I was thinking, what the heck's going on? They can't make enough noise to disrupt them, can they? And you know what? They were. I don't know how it works. I don't know how it worked that way, but it was incredible noise, as noisy as it seems it ever gets there. It was pretty amazing.
Murph, I've known you a long time. I know for a fact you are not a doctor, but do you feel like you are on concussion watch this week for Patrick Mahomes?
You know, I'm paying attention, and I saw the reports today, but I guess since Sunday night last week, I just figured that he's going to play, right? I mean, there's too much at stake. He'll go through what they call a concussion protocol, although he seems to be rocketing through the stages. And, look, I think the Bills are getting ready to play him with Mahomes, too. And, he's the number one star in the league. They're going to make sure, not the Chiefs, I'm talking about the league, will make sure that unless he's really compromised that he'll play. So I'm anticipating he'll play. I will watch the reports from the Chiefs practice tomorrow. They say they got light work in today and supposed to get a little more work in tomorrow. We'll see. But I'm pretty certain that Patrick Mahomes will play on Sunday.
So, again, the NFL, like it has done for decades, is taking concussions seriously.
You know, it's interesting, Eric. I asked I did an interview with a former Bills player the other day, Eric Wood.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, and I asked him, I said, and we talked about Mahomes. This was Monday I was talking. I said, are you left to wonder how much, you know, the league really, are they just paying lip service to concussion and concussion protocol? And Eric said, no. He said, they're serious about it. I mean, I have no reason to doubt Eric's sincerity. He said, no, I think they're concerned. And if he's damaged, he can't play. He said, he's right. You know, head injuries are a difficult thing to analyze and to figure out exactly how serious it is. But because I'm a little suspicious, I guess more suspicious than Eric Wood was.
Bills defense on Saturday, of course, holding the Ravens and Lamar Jackson to just 3 points. Weather with the wind in their favor. But have we seen Buffalo's defense kind of turn a corner here since that loss to the Cardinals? They were giving up 30 points on a semi-regular basis before the bye. Since then, haven't given up more than 26 to anybody.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that since that Week 11 Hail Mary loss to the Arizona Cardinals, the defense has been dramatically improved. That was about 2 months ago now, and it includes 8 games, basically half the season, including the 2 postseason games. But I know they're giving up about 10 points less per game since that game, you know, which is significant, really significant. They've done a much better job stopping the run, much better job against the pass. And it is especially critical this week. They're playing the Chiefs, obviously, who came in here to Orchard Park back in mid-October and ran for 250 yards on the ground. So the Bills need to be a much better run defense. And I think they will be a much better run defense than they were in that game because they've demonstrated they can be in the last few weeks. And it's not really, they're not doing it with mirrors. They have players who will play this Sunday who were not available to them in the October game, the Monday night game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt Milano and others, Levi Wallace, pretty good corner. So I think the defense has improved both from a personnel standpoint and schematically. And plus, they're more comfortable now. They started the season really having some rough times on defense because they only had, they had a kind of a brand new defensive line who only had 4 weeks of training camp and no preseason games. And it feels like it took them a while, 4 to 6 weeks at the start of the year, to kind of get to know each other. Now they all play together. And since then, as you mentioned, since the bye week after the Cardinals game, they've been sensational, one of the best defenses in the league.
We're talking with John Murphy, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills. You have known me for a long time, Murph. You have known me to ask plenty of dumb questions at press conferences in Buffalo. So allow me to ask another dumb one so you can criticize me. And I don't think it's, I really don't think it's that dumb of a question, actually, if you're a very competitive person. As a Bills fan, you as a Bills fan, because you grew up there, do you want Mahomes to play and get the Chiefs' best, or do you want Henny out there because it's an easier road to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, that's not a dumb question.
No, oh, thanks, Murph. Wow, that's probably the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
No, actually, I do want Patrick Mahomes playing, and part of it is because I am a fan, and you know, not just of the Bills but of the NFL. I want to see great players, and I think with Mahomes in there, I think the Bills, obviously, their chances probably are not enhanced, but I think a victory over that team would even mean that much more if Patrick Mahomes is playing. So for those reasons, and the fact that I'd love to see good players play, yeah, I want to see Patrick Mahomes play, and I think he will.
Will you be going out to Arrowhead for this one, John, or are you going to stay back in Buffalo, call it via the monitors?
No, you know, we've done all season with doing the road games in our broadcast booth at Bills Stadium, so I guess the decision was let's do one more, and if they win it and get to the Super Bowl, then we'd probably go. But, yeah, I feel bad about that. We haven't gone to any road games all year. We have a good setup at Bills Stadium. I mean, it's just us in the whole place, six people in our broadcast booth. The place will be dark. But we have a nice video feed, courtesy – well, it's not courtesy. We pay for it from the NFL and a couple of other sources, and get audio feed from Kansas City, I'm sure, you know, for referee mic and crowd noise. So we're – and you know what? We've got a good system down. You know, there were some bumps in the road. The first game we did, the Bills at Miami, week two, we lost our feeds, our video feeds, for a while. It was nuts. And then they had a 45-minute rain delay, you know, a lightning delay in Miami. Since then, it's gotten a lot smoother doing the road games, I'll tell you that.
At the risk of jinxing it, what do you think happens on Sunday?
I think the Bills are going to win. And I think I really think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think the Buffalo defense has righted the ship since that loss to Kansas City in October. I mean, they gave up all those rushing yards, and they went into the game determined not to give up the deep pass, and they didn't. I think they can do that again, adjust the defense to stop the run a little more. But what really fell short in the first meeting with Kansas City was the offense, and the offense is playing well. And I don't know that Kansas City really can match up with some of the offensive weapons the Bills have in their passing game. I think the Bills are going to win a close one, but a fairly high-scoring game. I'm looking for Buffalo on top, like 28-24.
The city of Buffalo and Denver, I think, have one thing in common, losing a lot of Super Bowls, meaning the Broncos lost a ton in the 80s, and then we know what happened in the early 90s with the Bills. And I worked in Buffalo right after the Bills went to their final Super Bowl, but the feeling probably was, man, I don't know if I really want us to go again because of what has happened. And I know Denver fans felt the same way in the 1980s after the, you know, Broncos got blown out in three Super Bowls. And you're thinking, man, dude, if we go again, I don't want to get embarrassed again, right? But there's been so much, there was so much time, though, between the Broncos' last blowout in a Super Bowl before they won it, that I think the wounds had healed at that point. I'm guessing now, because you really have a new generation of fans, no one is feeling that anymore. Hey, if we go, we might lose. Because that happened, what, nearly 25, 30 years ago?
Yeah, 27 years ago. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I was thinking, I've noticed this year, we talked earlier today about the fan reaction, and there is, Eric, a brand new generation of Bill fans, and they needed that, you know, fans who grew up, many of these young people grew up, my own sons grew up in the midst of a 17-year drought without a playoff spot, you know, a record-breaking drought without a playoff spot. And that's over now. They're in the playoffs three of the last 4 years. And I think these fans, these younger fans, have embraced this team. It's their team. The 90s Bills are always going to be honored and revered. But that's for old guys like me. I think the young people have a brand new group, cast of characters, and a team that they can call their own. And there is no fear. I think they want to win. They want to win everything they can. And to be honest with you, I think the Bills are set up to be successful for a couple of years. So I think that's exciting for these young fans as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, who else has no fear at all? And I mean this as a compliment. Even if the Bills don't win on Sunday, I don't think there is a more, and excuse the terminology, more passionate, vicious fan base than hashtag Bills Mafia. They come after you with a reckless abandon of, you know what? I really don't care what you think. I'm going to insult every member of your family and MF you every way I can up and down on Twitter.
But didn't they just raise $360,000 for Lamar Jackson's charity?
Yeah.
There's another side.
There's a balance.
There's another side to Bills Mafia here that's amazing. Ah,
okay. So you can go after your mama, but as long as you donate money. Is that the way it works out there in Western New York these days?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. They did it for Lamar Jackson. They did it for Josh Allen's grandmother passed away. They raised a bunch of money for a Buffalo hospital. They did it a couple of years ago for Andy Dalton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the good side of the Bills fan base. I really do.
Well, I cover the Bills and I cover the Chiefs, and I'm absolutely rooting for the Bills. And I'm rooting for you to be able to do play-by-play for your first Super Bowl. So I hope it happens for you and Mary and your boys, and you get that experience, Murph.
Great. Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate that.
Murph, thanks for your time, my friend.
Okay, good talking to you guys. Thank you.
Good talking to you. Coming up after the break, we talked at the top of the show about DeMarie Smith, the NFL union chief, about what the offseason could look like because of COVID. Well, what does that mean for baseball that is rapidly coming up? That's next.
Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason. Watch us at milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. Go to graniteliquidators.com. Time now for What's Trending.
What's Trending is presented by Colorado Off-Road in Littleton. If you need major accessory brands or something off-market for your truck, car, Jeep, or SUV, they've got it. Upfit today at Colorado Off-Road or go to cooffroad.com.
Okay, we talked about at the top of the show about what NFL union chief DeMarie Smith said about what could happen during this offseason with OTAs and mini camps and training camps. He believes that there might not be vaccinations for the players before August. So what kind of ramifications will it have for Major League Baseball? Honestly, I don't think it'll have much. Do you?
I think
I'll explain why in a minute.
I don't think it'll have much in terms of preventing a relatively full season. Because we saw last year, they had opportunities to get more games in. They could have delayed the postseason until November. Certainly, they made the neutral site postseason work in the end, and you were in California or you were in stadiums with roofs in Texas. So, in theory, you could say, okay, we're going to start the season later, and we're going to play until November, maybe even early December, and get in a full season. I don't think that's going to be the case, but what I would not be surprised on is a delay of a few weeks, but nothing more than that, and it would be a delay of a few weeks where they effectively get in a 162-game season in 5 months rather than six, primarily with the use of doubleheaders, of course, because one thing that we have learned is that they're going to have seven-inning games and doubleheaders again this year like they did last year to try to compress the schedule. I don't think it'll change much. I personally, if it were up to me, I'd kick the season back a couple of months, have the postseason stretch in November, because then there's a pretty good chance that you could effectively play around half the season with full stadiums as you get into August, September, and October. But it doesn't appear like that's going to be on the table.
I don't think that'll even be necessary at all. Mm-hmm. And they probably should start on time to boot. And here's my reason why. We see what's happening in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Games being canceled. NHL games being canceled. And the reason why I think these games are being canceled is because all of these guys were secluded in a bubble for last season, and they really didn't have a true protocol in place on what they needed to do. Now, there were rules, but it was really hard to break those rules. The baseball players have been through this already, and they know exactly what to expect, and they know what is expected of them. They've been through this drill before, so mistakes should not be made after what happened with the St. Louis Cardinals and what happened with the Miami Marlins. The baseball players have already gone through this rodeo before. The NHL players and the NBA players did not. I don't anticipate problems in Major League Baseball because everything that they're going to be doing this year is nothing more than rinse and repeat for this year, unless guys get stupid and start going out when they shouldn't go out.
The issue is actually more of an economic issue than anything, because a delay in the season would conceivably allow for a higher percentage of games to be played with close to full capacity.
That standards. Has to do with fans, not but with that, the actual well, players.
No, but it has to do with revenue.
No, I get that.
And that's
that'd be the only reason why. Yes,
and that's
I agree.
The key thing, because if you look at a scenario and say, like, for example, state of Colorado, if you go on the state of Colorado website, you'll find out that the timeline for the general population age 16 to 59 to get the vaccines is listed as summer. Right. So let's be positive and say, okay, that means they're starting in June and they're vaccinating on through July and August. You actually would reach a point where you could say mid-August, we're at full capacity again.
I mean,
and that's why if you delayed the season and then said, okay, we're going to just go ahead and play the postseason in November, kind of like we did this past year, you could...
November where?
In California and Texas. Like you did last year.
Well, I don't think some teams are going to really want to lose that potential revenue. Now, if you're the Dodgers, mm-hmm. you're probably fine with that.
Dodgers. Maybe what you do is you expand the number of venues and say, okay, we're going to make it more than four venues because we're not concerned about having everyone kind of sequestered. We're going to bring in a Milwaukee with a roof, Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden you get to where you've put together about half the venues in baseball that could host games in November. But the flip side of that is all these teams could effectively, if you push the season back by a month and you end the regular season in November, everybody gets 15 more home games and gets that money in the coffers because of it. And I don't think, I don't think baseball is going to find any issues attracting people to the parks once they open up and get vaccines. I think they're going to be playing in front of big crowds.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Let's say the Cubs or the Cardinals or the Yankees or the Red Sox make a run. Mm. You know the advantage they have? They get to have full stadiums and not pay the players, because that's the way it works in sports. You pay players for the regular season. You don't pay them for the playoffs. And that's where your real jackpot is as an owner. So if you have a really good team that is north of where the weather could be really bad, think of all that free money you are giving up, major money giving up.
But it's also bird in the hand versus two in the bush, because you say, okay, well, there's a chance that maybe we could go to the World Series and have the games in the postseason, or there's the surefire 14 to 15 home dates that I would get in October.
I think you're going to have...
If the regular season was delayed a month.
I think you might have stadiums in many cities a third to maybe a half capacity by May 1st. Mm-hmm. I think you delay the season 1 month. You delay it 1 month. Because then you're a month away from June, you take half the people in the stands now, and then maybe by June or, you know, mid-June, you could have full stadiums.
And if you delay the season by 1 month, that means you're starting the second half of the season on August 1st, and presumably that's when you can start talking about a full capacity. Like with the discussion we had with football, it's all about the off-season, but by preseason, they expect...
Remember
to have some fans in by regular season.
Remember, the players don't care about full capacity. They want a full season.
They want a full season, but the owners can go in and say, we'd like a full season as well. We'd like to make sure you're paid, and we have a better chance of being able to pay you that in baseball if we kick this thing back a month and have more games on the back half of the schedule with full capacity.
Yeah, I don't think the players are going to buy that. Because you know what? Even if revenue comes in, you're still going to have quote-unquote collusion when free agency starts.
What
again.
Do you think the players...
We can't afford it. We suffered too much in 2020.
What do you think the players would rather have? 130 games or 100 games with the season delayed and ending on time? Or 162 games with the season delayed and ending a month later?
No, they'll take that. They'll take exactly. 162
And that's
games.
Why I think that they might be amenable to taking a delayed season that ends yep. with the World Series ending around Thanksgiving.
What do we have coming up on Just In Case You Missed It?
Well, speaking of the MLB season, a lot of players on the move this offseason, and George Springer, one of those, he'll be donning a new jersey for next season. So we'll talk about which MLB team has had the best offseason. That's next right here on Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason.
Tell you about a place. Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. Go to graniteliquidators.com. Time now for the final word.
The final word. Are you ready? Presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk. Just in case you missed it, presented by Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason.
Just in case you missed it, George Springer and the Toronto Blue Jays have agreed to a six-year, $150 million deal. So, Mace, Eric, which MLB team has had the best offseason thus far?
Padres.
Yeah, easily. I mean, the Padres have had their statement of intentions this offseason. It's a good pickup for the Blue Jays, although I thought that the Jays might wait a year before really starting to spend heavily in free agency, just based on the fact that you look at their lineup, it showed some promise last year. There's a lot of young players, a lot of thump, of course, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in there. But it seemed like they were a year away from this sort of move. Maybe they're trying to microwave it a little bit. Perhaps they see an opening with the Rays losing Blake Snell, the Yankees good but not great, and the Red Sox down. The Jays may see their window of contention opening here.
Yeah.
Just in case you missed it, Kyrie Irving has returned to the Nets, and he's playing right now against the Cleveland Cavaliers already with 11 points. Now, Kyrie has been away from the team since January 5th. That's the last game he played with them, and he has been fined by the league. He said to press yesterday he just needed a pause despite being very early in the season. How do you see this playing out with Kyrie? Is this kind of a Dennis Rodman scenario where he just needed a couple days to clear his head?
Why did he need a pause again?
He said he had a lot going on with his family.
Oh, okay.
And he was getting fined, so yeah. It wasn't at a point where it would be what they call an excused absence. So if he's been fined and here he's playing tonight, is he just playing so he won't get fined?
Probably.
In the parlance of Marshawn Lynch?
You know, there's always something with that guy, isn't there?
With Kyrie Irving?
No, there's something going on with his family that's awful, my heart goes out to him, and I have a lot of empathy for him. Mm-hmm. But this is just a string of unfortunate events where there's always something going on with him.
The problem is he's a little bit of the, you know, of someone who cried wolf, basically. After a while, you're like, okay, what's next? I mean, what is he going to use to get out of playing next time? What sort of crazy thing is he going to say? Is he going to go back to saying the earth is flat again? I mean, I don't know. I know he's a talented player, but I think it's going to be too combustible in there with him and James Harden. I'm not really worried about how Kevin Durant handles it. It's more him and James Harden. I think the Nets are going to be disappointed with what this big three of theirs ends up producing.
Just in case you missed it, sticking on the hard court, Damian Lillard has passed Kobe Bryant for career three-point field goals made and is now number 17 overall in NBA history with 1,828. He's still over 1,000 made field goals behind Ray Allen for number one. Do you think that anyone will catch Ray Allen at 2,973 career three-point field goals?
Well, I mean, you look at Damian Lillard here, and right now he's 30 years old, turns 31 in July. And what is he averaging in terms of number of 3-point field goals per year? He's averaging what, about 200 and about 250 or so per year, something like that. I think the guy who catches Ray Allen is Dame. I think he gets there.
Yeah,
well, if he stays healthy.
I don't know if the Blazers are going to catch anybody in the standings now that McCollum is out with a broken foot and he's going to be evaluated in 4 weeks. So, you know, great.
If he maintains himself as somebody who can hit anywhere from 37% to 40% from 3-point range as he gets into his 30s, mm-hmm. he will end up playing a long time. That will have value.
Yeah, but you know what? Who's the best shooter in NBA history?
Larry Bird.
No. Playing right now, Steph Curry. Now, you can argue for Larry Bird.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, for as great as Dame Lillard is, mm-hmm. he'll never be one of the top two jump shooters of all time.
No. Now, he might compile big numbers like I'm alluding to.
Yeah.
But he won't be regarded as one of those guys. Now, if you were doing an NBA top 50 of all time, another few years, he could be on that list.
Top 50 as in top 50 players of all time?
Yeah.
Dame Lillard?
If he keeps playing like this, if he keeps this up for another 3 years as that sort of score, he would be in that conversation. Yeah. But not the top two or three shooters of all time.
No.
The Colorado Buffaloes in action tonight against One Win Washington. I believe it is a double point spread for the Buffaloes. Will they cover and take home the easy victory over the Huskies?
The computer says they should. I mean, they're sitting there right now at number 7 in the net rankings that you're used to determine seeding. A lot better in the net than they are in the actual polls compiled by People. Washington, a dreadful 1-11 start to their season. CU should win this one comfortably.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Alex, Danny, and Mace, great job as always today. Tomorrow's already Thursday. It's been a quick week, hasn't it?
They're all quick right now, feels like.
Yeah.
Can you believe that we're 3 weeks into the Bronco offseason?
Wow.
Like, this is the third week of the offseason, right? Or is it the second?
I've never thought about it that way.
Well, maybe not. Hang on. Maybe it's the second. You know what? I don't know. I'm totally off. It's actually the second week. My bad. See? I don't even know what week it is.
Come on, Mace. Get it together.
I'm trying, man. Really? I'm trying. I'm doing my best. What is the date anyway?
This is my partner.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Your partner has a casual relationship with the
truth,
the calendar at this point. It just shows that everything's blending together. All I
You'll
know
be the
is,
Senior Bowl next week. It'll be
exactly,
very exciting.
All I know is I'm going to be doing remote shows from Mobile, Alabama, as the only thing that could be quasi-normal about the NFL offseason is happening next week. That's the Senior Bowl.
Make it the best possible night you can. All right.